ready to go. Hour number two, and there's a lot going on out there, as you well know. We've talked about so many things, and we're in our fourth year now of trying to bring as much information forward as we can so all of you can make better decisions, whatever those decisions may be. We don't tell people what to do. We just don't do that. We're not that kind of people. We want you to be able to make your choices at no disadvantage, if that's possible at all. We've also talked about blood donations, which very few people are talking about. And I thought we might do a little bit tonight and talk about that as well. There are some new, well, they're not new, they're pretty much the same. They're regulations on how people can donate blood. It's pretty interesting. We'll bring you up to speed on that. And there are some other things as well. Are you there?
I am here.
What you been doing?
Ready for action.
Yeah. This issue of blood donations, it's first of all, I've always disliked the Red Cross. Now, some of you might say, how dare you? No, I dare, because the Red Cross is gaining money, usually for free. The blood comes from people, they're donors, they pay them a little bit for it, and they break this blood down into various components and sell it all over the place. Big money. Big money. It's a big, big profit center. It's also a lying, despicable group of people at the top level. They know they're lying. They won't change. And they continue to tell people that the blood supply is perfectly safe. No, it's not. You might as well get jabbed with a Pfizer or Moderna booster if you're going to get blood transfused. It's going to be loaded with spike protein, probably mRNA, probably DNA plasmids. There could be other things as well. They don't screen for any of these things, and they're lying about it, and they're making a filthy profit. That's the truth. What are their regulations? They might say, well, we have regulations. No, they really don't, except that it serves their cash register bottom line. It's pretty crazy. And we do see stories, and we've reported stories about people getting transfused. I personally knew somebody who was going to get blood transfusions, and I said, please don't do it. And that person went ahead and did it and was dead within 5 weeks. That's what happens. No joke. I'm not saying everybody who gets a transfusion will be dead in 5 weeks, but this person was and should not have died. Go ahead.
Nurse Lindsay, who we had on the program on Monday, related a story about one of her vax-injured companions there, colleagues, that has been undergoing what we call IVIG treatments. It's an infusion of immune globulins that are helpful in some instances for regulating the immune response, this just hyper-reactive immune response. So it calms the immune system down so the body stops attacking itself. Well, these infusions are produced from the blood, the immune globulins of, you know, several thousand donors. And her last batch didn't go so well. And they believe, because it's not being screened for spike, that she got a contaminated batch. You know, at this stage of the game, it's probably highly likely. And so she had a fairly serious setback.
I'll bet. This
No, the blood supply is not safe in any way, shape, or form. And in fact, I just got another invitation today. They're still recruiting candidates or participants for this young blood plasma, this age reversal therapy.
Uh-huh.
If you're interested.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a good story. Go ahead and spend a little time on that. The people are, it's the fountain of youth. Some people suggest it may kind of ring along with, the idea of drinking young children's blood. All right.
Well,
anyway.
This is what they're doing is, and this isn't really that new, but they're dangling it in front of people like it's something extraordinary, and you know, we'll turn back the hands of time. Let me find it. I might have deleted it. Oh, here it is. Young plasma, IRB, Investigational Review Board study. Experience the benefits of this robust and well-documented anti-aging protocol through this unique IRB-approved study. Young blood plasma collected from sex-identified individuals between the ages of 18 and 25 reverses age-related profiles and inhibits systemic or initiates systemic rejuvenation. For more information and to ask questions, click here. So I wouldn't go near that.
No way. No, and I just wonder how many people have actually been basically clean, unvaxxed, and they go in and they have to in an emergency situation get a donation from the Red Cross, get a transfusion, and end up with all manner of symptoms and vax injury profiles in the months and years
now,
ahead.
Some people
now, we're
have
into
no
this
choice.
Years. Understood. Yeah. Now, I get it. We're up on that. But it's sad. It's because they're not screening the blood. They're lying.
Yeah, and here's a little addendum to this invitation. Safety. Plasma is regulated by the FDA. Now, that makes me feel good. Under rules delineated in 21 CFR 640.
Right.
Plasma
right.
has been in continuous use since the 1920s, and its general safety and efficacy has long been proven.
Wow.
You can say anything now.
And they do.
Get away with it. Yeah.
They're absolutely saying anything now. No question about it. Let me find my other thing. So, just in short, who do you trust now? Who do you trust in the medical establishment? Really? You can't trust the Red Cross. We know two-thirds of professional healthcare workers chose to get shot up 2 years ago or thereabout when they were mandated to take the shot or take a walk, and they took it. One-third left the health professions. Many have been begged back now, please come back to work, because they're short people, and they're having to pull in people from Haiti and third world countries. And as you heard from Nurse Anne, they don't even know how to read a coronary monitor. They can't do anything. This is bad. Here's the blood information. Question. Are individuals who received a COVID-19 vaccine, bioweapon, eligible to give blood, platelets, and plasma? Answer, yes. You can donate blood after getting a COVID-19 vaccine, no problem, just as long as you are symptom-free and feeling well at the time of the donation. Does that sound like a stringent screen they're throwing up to try to protect the recipients of these? No. Please come prepared to share the manufacturer's name of the vaccine you received. If you do not know the name of the vaccine manufacturer, we request you wait 2 weeks to make your donation out of precaution. Oh, thank you. The American Red Cross follows FDA. There's that powerhouse institution, the FDA, follows FDA blood donation eligibility guidance for those who receive COVID-19 vaccination. And deferral times may vary depending upon the type of vaccine and individual receivers. Here's another one. The following eligibility guidelines apply to each COVID-19 vaccine received, including boosters. There is no deferral time, no wait time, for eligible blood donors who are vaccinated with an inactivated or RNA-based COVID-19 vaccine manufactured by AZ, J&J, Moderna, Novavax, or Pfizer. Eligible blood donors who received a live attenuated COVID-19 vaccine or do not know what type of COVID-19 vaccine they received must wait 2 weeks before giving blood. So that's the most conservative safety screen I've seen yet. Wait 2 weeks, then go ahead.
Well, most recently, it looks like they may be asking more questions now.
Well, I would hope, but Yeah.
Well, right now, if you're interested in donating blood, or maybe you're an approved donor on this rapid path thing, question number 79, have you ever had, ever in capital words, had a coronavirus, i.e. COVID-19 vaccine? If you answer yes to this question, please call 1-800-RED-CROSS before coming in to donate to determine if this will affect your status.
No, they'll have a couple of perfunctory questions I'll throw out, and I'll say, yeah, that sounds fine to me. Go right on in. No problem.
Well, they must be having or running into issues with the blood.
I hope so. I hope so. But I don't think it's going to upset the bandwagon. Not yet, anyway. They're just happily strolling along, singing a song, and making billions, or however, mm-hmm. how much, lots. Okay, the unvaxxed. Those of us who have not taken the injection, and certainly those of us who have always been relatively aware of the danger out there of being around the vaccinated, have in many cases paid a very big price for saying no to the shot. Many have lost their jobs. Quite frankly, many have lost their families, their spouses, their lives. No joke. They are trying to now sidestep any damages that they may have picked up in the meantime by shedding. Shedding has been, I think, far worse than we originally thought it might be, although we knew the potential was there. We're now seeing unvaxxed, uninjected people showing all manner of symptomology, from women bleeding, to people with clots, to people manifesting heart issues, and name a few more. In other words, the unvaxxed are beginning to pay seriously, very seriously, for being around the vaxxed, as we warned years ago.
Yeah, I just heard or read somebody saying they have a relative that has developed a turbo lung cancer, unvaxxed.
Yeah.
Unvaxxed.
Yeah. So, in other words, the people who stood tall and said no, and I'm not knocking those who didn't, they, in many cases, would have lost everything immediately, not really believing that they would eventually lose potentially their lives, their families, and the work, not just their jobs. They've lost a lot. And these people were mocked, you remember. They were laughed at. They were abused, and yet they stood their ground.
They were excluded.
They were
excluded from participating in society in many countries. It wasn't that bad here, but certainly in Europe.
Yeah. Yes. So those people really were heroic in their dedication to themselves and their view of the truth and reality, but it was not a cheap deal. You had to pay. And so those people now are really perhaps the saddest of the victims, because they did their damnedest. And unless you literally, this, and you know this, I'm not telling anyone, we don't tell people what to do. But here are the options for you. You either do the best you can to minimize your contact, call it self-isolation if you want, with the vaxxed community, or expect to pay. You're going to get tagged one way or another. And if it's constant exposure to the vaxxed, probably all the worse. If it's infrequent, Erica, I think, was the very first person to suggest that the body, given a reasonably healthy configuration, can fight off the spike if you don't continually expose yourself to it. You'll have a threshold upon which, if you exceed that, you're in trouble. But before that, if you minimize your contact and exposure, you can probably do okay. That's been her thing from the beginning, and we've stood behind that all the way. We believe that is the reality of the situation, and that you really need to try to minimize your contact as much as you can. That's not to say turn into a hermit and go hide, but when you go out, wear a mask. This is Jeff and Erica talking. Our suggestion, wear a mask. And if necessary, If you're going to be around like lots of grocery carts, get a pair of gloves you keep in the car, just lightweight little cotton gloves, whatever you're happy with. Put the gloves on, because touching the handles on the shopping carts is really fraught with a lot of potential unpleasantness. I'm trying to dance around my words here. But the mask is not perfect. It's an N95. That's what we recommend. Don't just put a bandana around your face. That's not going to help. Get an N95, disposable if you need to, or they have some that you can wash and use over and over again. That's what we have. They're actually lined with copper. And wear that, wear it properly, and do your shopping and get out and take it off. We're not saying that anyone should wear it in the car driving home. That's not the issue here. The issue is to minimize your risk. So I hope that's real clear. And if you don't choose to do that, fine. That's fine. But if that mask only gives me about 20%, 30% chance of avoiding contact with spike, et cetera, I'll take it. I'll take that in a heartbeat. Give me another mask.
I want to add that, you know, in defense of these people that are now suffering because, you know, they chose not to take this intervention, countermeasure, stood their ground, and in some cases gave up jobs, lost friends and family, and they've been sickened. They've been sickened by the bioweapon that's now contaminating the environment, whatever that is, the spike and whatever else is in there. And they are sick to the point that some of them are not able to leave their homes anymore. And it's getting worse, and there's more of them. And many of them have to wear a mask to go out, because if only because of the smells. They have been so hypersensitized to the smell that's associated with this poison. And I get irritated when I hear the snarky comments about how masks are nothing but virtue signaling, that they're meaningless. No. You spend time in a multiple chemical sensitivities group where people are battling this illness, and it is an illness. Those people have to wear masks just to cut down on the amount of toxins that they're inhaling. Otherwise, they're physically sick.
So
if anyone's wearing a mask right now, it's not because they're virtue signaling. There's no mandates now. People aren't doing it because the government told them to do
it.
They're doing it out of their own volition.
Right.
And I really get tired of hearing the like I said, these snarky comments.
It's people being people, and that's all you can do. Know that 95% of them are not making snarky comments. They probably understand. They very cleverly, I said this the other day, they very cleverly made this mask-wearing issue very confusing for people. They say, it's that they don't work. It's not going to work for you. Well, they never explained quite how it's not going to work.
It's not black and white.
No.
You know, if you use it properly in the right circumstances for the intended purpose, it can work.
Correct.
There's plenty of people in this vax shedding group that's, you know, teetering on 17,000 members now that swear by it.
Yeah.
It helps.
Of course it does. In other words, even if it's 10%, which I think it's far more than that, wouldn't you rather have that 10% working on your side? I think you would. If you're vaxxed or not vaxxed, doesn't matter.
We're not just talking about protecting from a spike protein. There are many other toxins in the environment right now. I mean, we are living in
tuberculosis,
you know, a toxic soup. The body, these people's bodies are in such a state that they're reacting to things that they shouldn't be reacting to because their immune systems are so stressed.
Yes. Yes. The idea of making this a constitutional issue to further confuse people, I have a right to do whatever I want. I don't have to wear this mask. And as soon as the government mandated it, which actually would have helped a lot of people, the people rebelled and said, no, I'm not going to wear that. I don't have to do that. I get it. I understand. But they made the whole thing into such a convoluted mess in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's still that way. And the bottom line is simple. You know, it's like wearing shoes. You can get along outside if you build up your calluses and all that. Gets damn cold, though. Put shoes on. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's very good and very helpful information, we hope, for all of you. When you make your decision, and I'm to the point now, and we've been talking about this, we both have full-face respirators. I don't think I'm letting anything out of school here. We both have half-face respirators. That's just nose and on down. And I'm getting to the point now where I'm seriously thinking about beginning to wear that. I saw one woman wearing one once, and no one said anything. It was fine.
Again, you know, you don't know why the person is wearing the mask.
No, you have no idea.
And I will tell you that there are staggering numbers of people who are now becoming, they're now, you know, environmentally sensitive because of what's been done to us.
And that's not an overstatement. This has all been done to us. And if you're new to the game, who owns the shots? It's not the CDC, FDA, USDA. It's the Pentagon. The military owns the shots. What does that tell you, for goodness sakes? This is a bioweapon.
Yes, it is.
The virus is a bioweapon. The injections are bioweapons. And this is the most sophisticated, diabolically complex bioweapon I can imagine. It targets all the major organ systems in the body, the blood, all the arterial and venous system plumbing, your veins, arteries. It targets your immune system. It targets your heart. It destroys your digestive tract balance, for sure. All the major organs are certainly in the crosshairs of this thing, lungs, liver, kidneys, you name it, eyes. The entire reproductive system is gone, trashed, men and women, and the entire neurology in your body, as in all your nerves, which the spike loves to live in, and then the brain. If it doesn't get you in those first eight things, number nine will take you out, the brain. So this is not a joke, and we're not being overly dramatic, never have, never would be. We're trying to bring this straight to you, so you can see it clearly and make better decisions, whatever they may be.
Yeah, well said.
All right, let's, what do you want to do now? We've got so many readers backed up, and they're really important to some of them. You want to do some of those?
Well, I wanted to offer some insight into...
Oh, that's right. Hold on. This is really important. Now, this is Erica's mind at work, and her biophysiological brilliance, and she's got an angle on this, which I think is very important to consider. Time will tell, but I think she's onto it. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, this is not an entirely novel concept. This issue of smells, people becoming hypersensitive to the smells coming off of those who have taken the injection, and in some cases, those that just hang around those who have taken the injections. I mean, you know, there is this secondary shedding. This poison can be carried on people's clothing and hair. And once you've become sensitized to it, life becomes pretty miserable.
Miserable.
And it seems to get progressively worse with each exposure.
One thing, if I might, let me say this. When you said miserable, we have people listening right now who quite literally are so hypersensitized, they are afraid to go out the door because of what they're going to encounter. And it's not in their head. It's real. And it makes them sick. And this is no joke. Anyway, go ahead.
You know,
there's
it starts
very
off where, you know, you have to avoid public places. And, you know, as long as you don't go to crowded places, you're okay. But then with each exposure, it just seems like your tolerance for it becomes less and less, to the point where you don't even want to go out of the house. And I have seen a couple people, you know, actually more than a few, depends on the group, where the smells are so bad, they're so bothered by the smells, I should say, because not everybody smells these things. They are taping up their windows, drafty windows, trying to find ways to block the air ducts. because they are so sickened by these smells, physically sickened. Now, one of the things that's known to precipitate this type of severe sensitivity is carbon monoxide. Now, you can get it two ways. You can certainly get it in the environment. It's from the incomplete combustion of carbon, basically, or hydrocarbons. And but also your body generates small amounts of carbon monoxide, particularly when red blood cells or hemoglobin is being broken down. We know with this disease, the spike protein causes microclotting. The microclotting is destroying the red blood cells. And it may be at such a rate that you're generating a lot of carbon monoxide. And there is at least one case in the literature that I was able to find that somebody actually died from their own production of carbon monoxide through a hemolytic anemia. So it can accumulate. It would be rare, but you know, in this situation where people are breaking down blood cells on a regular basis and generating carbon monoxide in the process, it's conceivable that that could happen. And I think that that is what's happening in this case of shedding, that people that are around the vaxxed, the unvaxxed that are around the vaxxed, are generating levels of carbon dioxide that are toxic. And when you look at what the symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning are, you will see many of the same symptoms that you see for shedding sickness. You know, everything from headache, dizziness, nausea, fatigue. Some people have a higher tolerance for carbon monoxide than others, so that might explain the difference. And again, if you're able to keep that carbon monoxide to a level that you can either exhale, you're probably going to be okay. But if your lungs are somehow compromised and you're not able to expel that carbon dioxide, well, it's going to build up a little more in your system. And so once the body has become sensitized to carbon monoxide in that way, it changes sensitivity. And I'm going to read you something. This is from a toxicologist by the name of Albert Donnay, D-O-N-N-A-Y. He's an expert in the field of carbon monoxide. After people have been CO poisoned, carbon monoxide poisoned, they may become hypersensitive thereafter to even very low levels of carbon monoxide exposure. They actually become so sensitive to carbon monoxide that they overreact to even the relatively low levels produced by their body in response to stress of any kind. While some of the carbon monoxide produced by the body is bound tightly to hemoglobin, transported to the lungs and exhaled, most binds to other proteins and is active in at least 90 pathways, including as a gaseous neurotransmitter in the regulation of learning, memory, heart rate, respiration, and vasodilation. Of most significance to people with MCS, multiple chemical sensitivity, is that carbon monoxide controls sensory sensitization and adaptation to odors, lights, sounds, and all types of sensory stimuli. These effects occur at relatively low levels of carbon monoxide, under 5 parts per million in non-smokers. So unless adapted or habituated to much greater exposures, as smokers are, for example, most humans are very sensitive to breathing in or producing small amounts of carbon monoxide. So, CO poisoning, carbon monoxide poisoning, should be suspected whenever any of the following, quote, flu-like symptoms persist or recur regularly, especially if affecting more than one person or pet at a time: headache, fatigue, weakness, muscle pain, cramps, nausea, vomiting, upset stomach, diarrhea, confusion, memory loss, dizziness, incoordination, chest pain, rapid heartbeat, difficult or shallow breathing, changes in sense of hearing, vision, smell, taste, and touch. From more common multisensory sensitivity at one extreme to less common loss of smell, taste, hearing, and or vision at other extremes. So the antidote is oxygen. Now, there's a Dr. Sarah Myhill in the UK who is probably the only practitioner I've come across that's aware of this. She's got a website if you want to check that out. But the treatment
spell
is
her last name, please.
Myhill, Myhill, Sarah Myhill. And right. She's been a doctor in the field of, complex chronic disease for a couple decades anyway. But I think this is a very much overlooked trigger for this shedding sickness.
Got it.
Now, that's not to say that you couldn't also be allergic in some form to the spike and be having a hypersensitivity reaction that way. It may be that. It may be both of these things.
Mm-hmm. Well,
getting back to the treatment is, it's not, that elaborate. It's supplemental oxygen, and it would be, I think they said, 5 liters per minute concentrated oxygen for 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. So, you would have to have an oxygen concentrator or a canister to do that.
You can't just buy a bottle.
A hyperbaric chamber.
All right.
I'm not sure what the bottle's there. I don't know if that's sufficient.
Mm-hmm. See, it seems like it might not be, but there are a lot of people who
really take hits of that.
Right. There are a lot of people who are pursuing hyperbaric therapy, and it's reported to be helpful, certainly symptomatically, and that's another thing to consider, but it's very expensive.
Oxygen's a double-edged sword. You can't live with it, but it can do, you can't live without it. However, it can do a lot of damage.
You bet.
Oxidative stress does a lot of damage. And in a situation of high inflammation where you've got a lot of free iron, that's the other byproduct of heme breaking down. When heme, as in hemoglobin, breaks down, you get carbon monoxide, iron,
right,
and biliverdin, which gets converted to bilirubin. And you'll see a lot of these people do have very high bilirubin levels, and that's a sign that your red blood cells are breaking down. And
what might cause that? How about spike protein?
Yeah, the clotting. This clotting thing, when you see these misshapen red blood cells, it's because they've been caught up as they make their way through the circulatory systems and through the vessels, and there's clots forming. They get ripped apart.
Right.
Or misshapen. They don't form right, or they bend.
Spike takes no prisoners, whether it's a cell or a blood cell, it doesn't matter. It'll get in there and cause them to go into a stasis, kind of a decline, senescence, whatever you want to call it. And then your body will come in there and take that decaying material and allegedly get rid of it. So your blood cells are being reduced by the spike, among many other things.
And the heme, not only is heme necessary for hemoglobin, which carries the iron, which, allows you to carry oxygen around your body. But heme is also used in myoglobin, which is a storage form of oxygen in the muscles. So if you don't have heme in your myoglobin in the muscles, you're going to feel fatigue. It's also used in the mitochondria and cytochromes to create ATP. It's also used in catalase, which is necessary for breaking down hydrogen peroxide, and when you get sores inside your mouth, that's hydrogen peroxide because there's not enough catalase to break it down.
Your body's cells actually make hydrogen peroxide. Nobody knows that either, but it's a
they do.
It's one of the baselines,
especially in cases of inflammation. That's why you have to be careful if you're doing oxidative therapies on top of a situation where you're already generating lots of your own
oxidants.
Oxidative products. That's all well and good if you have the antioxidant defenses, and that's another thing that's happening in this disease situation is that the body's own antioxidants cannot keep up with the oxidative stress.
No. All right. That's very good, and it's something we'll keep watch over. You may be onto something there. It's certainly a key component of it. All right, we've got multiple chemical sensitivity, several at the top here. If you're ready, we'll jump into that.
Yeah,
why don't we? All right.
All right, now
here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. The first one, there's three. This is end of November. All right, so it's fairly new. Hello, all. Actually, he said, hi, all. I'm having awful problems with smells, mostly floral and chemical. So bad I can taste them, but others around me smell nothing. This bout has been 10 days of insomnia, nausea, tight chest, dizziness. The list goes on. Family doesn't believe me either. Also, I get neck, throat, and gland pain. Using my phone seems to make it worse. I'm lost and pretty scared. And the response to that is a couple of them. I feel for you. I have the same issues as well. My family thinks I'm crazy. It hurts because no one believes me. I avoid everything that may trigger my condition. I like traveling, but I have to do a lot of research before I make hotel reservations. I go to tropical places because most of the hotels have ceramic tiles, and I have allergic reactions to carpets and new furniture. Please know that you are not alone. And another one chips in. This just happened to me. I went through many antibiotics and binders. Nothing helped. Many doctors as well. Went to Chinese medical doctor, M-O-M-O, Momo, who was actually Japanese. She gave me four things. One was awful. One did nothing. One kind of helped, but the Zhang Clinic Allison cured these symptoms in 48 hours. Actually feel amazing now, and no more dizziness, no more chemical sensitivity at all. Now, I'm going to back that up just a little bit. She said, Allison cured these symptoms in 48 hours. That's MCS, her multiple chemical sensitivity. That's extraordinary. That would suggest a bacterial component somehow, somewhere, interfering with your neurology. Your sense of smell, etc.
Or, it could be. That's a possibility. But you know what? Allicin, which comes from garlic, is full of the sulfur thiol compounds. And those are really tremendous for detoxifying. I mean, the body needs sulfur to detoxify. So if this was some kind of, you know, toxification that was happening, that could explain that.
Right. So a comment to that, so the Allicin helped you 100%. Did you change your diet? And the first poster says, nope, nothing different. Now, Allicin will sound familiar to many of you. If you go on the homepage at rents.com, look for the Allicin C banner. This is, without question, the best form of Allicin in the world. And I'm not joking. I've been offering it and making it available for almost 20 years now. It is wonderful. Each capsule has the equivalent of 35 cloves of organic garlic Allicin in the capsule. The Allicin of 35 organic cloves of garlic in each capsule with, you ready? No odor. Some people do Allicin and they smell like a garlic factory. Allicin C, no odor. And you can call your order in. We've got it set up now for credit cards, next day shipping usually, priority mail. So I'm recommending that people take one a day as just a precaution. This is a prophylactic, if you will. Keep your Allicin content at least apparent in your body because it does a lot. This Allicin is the most effective broad-spectrum antibiotic, all natural, in the world. It will not wipe out your digestive bacterial count. It won't put you back, so you have to start taking all kinds of probiotics and hoping you can rebuild. It doesn't do that to you. Allicin C is the best product of its type, I think, without hesitation, in the world. And I've had many, many people over the years have extraordinary results. So I'm glad these people did that and found out that it does work. Are we saying it'll work in every case? No. But in the case I just read, it did. So that's something to consider trying, for sure. All right, onward.
Yeah. Okay, continuing on that person with the new symptoms, that's the problem. No one else can smell or feel these things. Much would change if they could. Next person says, same issues with tongue, roof of the mouth, and throat burning and tingling. Took me a few months to replace all products in my home, which reduced frequency of assaults. Replaced most gasoline outdoor equipment with battery-powered. I also added kitchen exhaust vent that is ducted to the outside. I prep all foods right beside the stove and run the fan. I mask everywhere I go. I carry a couple varieties in my purse. It doesn't solve every smell. Some use tri-salts at the reaction onset or saline nasal irrigation. I bought 2 Austin Air HealthMate Plus air cleaners, and I will buy a third. Now I'm wearing gloves to go shopping, as too often the cart handles covered with perfumed hand lotion.
First time we've seen that in print, or first time I've seen it in print. That's really good to see. We've been harping on that for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, don't overlook the shopping cart. They're filthy. If someone enters my house, I lay a shower curtain liner on furniture to prevent their laundry product transfer. I buy them for $2.99 at Target. Many uses, no smell. Next person, sounds like you're totally new to this illness. I'm so sorry. Sounds like it has appeared all of a sudden and quite severely. That's how it happened with me also. First and best thing is to avoid all these things as much as you can. The sensitivity to electromagnetic fields from cell phones is pretty common too. If it helps at all, you're not alone. Family, etc., usually don't believe us. See if you can get out in nature as much as possible. That might help. You need to breathe some clean air as much as you can. You might find that you feel a bit better if you avoid certain foods. Supplements and herbs that support your detoxification system may help. Also, eating only organic foods. Mostly, you want to avoid all those awful smells as much as possible. Best of luck. Hope things calm down for you. At some point, you might want to find a good Lyme doctor, if you can, and get tested for Lyme disease. Another person says, welcome. You will find support and understanding here. You're not alone. I'm sorry your family doesn't believe you. It's the same for many here. Check out a book called Detoxify or Die by Sherry Rogers. It gives many helpful tips for detoxifying. And next one, believe me, it will only get worse. Do something ASAP.
And to finish off this string, I have issues with most scents. They give me headaches. I was smelling an awful chemically pollen-like stink on and off, and no one else could smell it. It turns out I had a sinus infection. Antibiotics helped a little bit, but a nasal spray for allergies has definitely helped. Drink lots of filtered water. Check your diet, too. Dairy makes me short of breath. I hope you feel better soon. And the final post, so sorry, the initial stage is getting your family on board with this. Otherwise, it'll make it very difficult for you. Everyone should switch their scented products, chemicals, and laundry detergent as well. So you want to buy laundry detergent, she's saying, that has no aroma to it. And that's quite available. To manage this condition, avoidance is the only option. Are you aware of what caused this to happen? Have you been exposed to anything hazardous at work and so on? So there you go. This is a growing phenomenon, this MCS. It's spreading very quickly, and we are not sure why.
I know why. Was known that the infection, the virus, caused people, many people who, you know, afterwards to become hypersensitive, to have this I guess it's a, what do they call it, central sensitization syndrome, where your nervous system has changed, and it's now hypersensitive to a lot of different stimuli that comes into the body from the environment and has to be interpreted and responded to. And again, the carbon monoxide that is generated in the course of the disease, and that was known, that in cases of COVID, both methemoglobin, which is the oxidized form of hemoglobin, the brown chocolate blood, was an issue, and to some degree, the carboxyhemoglobin, which is carbon monoxide bonded to hemoglobin, was also a problem. So these levels can rise to a point where it changes the nervous system to begin responding in this hypersensitive way. And by all accounts, it looks like the toxins coming off the vax, whether that's the spike protein or something else, is doing the exact same thing. And the electromagnetic sensitivity goes along with it.
All right, very good. We just have about 3 minutes left here. Jump down to the next group. We've got three cardiac carnage stories.
What day
first
are you
one,
on?
The next block down, 14, February 16.
Okay.
It's the third, fourth, and fifth stories.
Cardiac carnage?
Cardiac, yeah.
Okay.
All right. First one, my daughter's good friend, age 30, just had open heart surgery after suffering two heart attacks. She had been having pain and discomfort, and it was pushed off as anxiety and stress, etc. When she was admitted to the hospital in Boston and the cardiac surgeon saw her, his first question was, did you have the you-know-what? The vax. Unfortunately, she had, and he told her she was the third patient like this just this week. There's definitely a connection, and doctors are seeing it. Well, you bet. Fortunately, she's okay, but it could have gone the other way, and she would have left a young daughter and a husband way too soon. As an addition to that from someone else, cardiovascular ICU RN here, registered nurse, works cardio. Lots and lots of stories like this, so they fixed her for the time being. The body does not stop responding to the spike protein from the you-know-whats. In my opinion, it's just a matter of time before she will have the same problems again, or worse. She needs to do all that she can to detox, essentially, forever, so that she doesn't die from these things. And someone adds to that, I'm an RN too. What exactly are you seeing? Lots of plague in the arteries? Well, she wrote plague. No, it is plaque. Lots of plaque in the arteries? More AFib? More heart failure? More pacemakers? I'm afraid that everyone who got the you-know-what has a damaged heart now. And a lot of people believe that. All right, go ahead.
I work at a level one trauma center in academic teaching facility, seeing a lot of what you described, lots of patients coming in with STEMIs and NSTEMIs that need high-risk PCI because they can't get to the areas with regular cath lab, patient needing open hearts because their hearts are shot, ejection fractions greatly reduced, as in not life-sustaining, and having to go home on drips to make their heart squeeze more effectively. Lots of pacemakers because the you-know-whats jack up the electrical components. Lots of ventricular tachycardia arrests that if they survive, we are having to medically sedate so that they do not feel the continuous VT arrest. And us shocking them and doing CPR or the pacemaker shocking them.
Good grief.
Yeah. Patients needing mechanical hearts. LVADs, RVADs, because their hearts are trashed. We don't do transplants at our hospital, but we refer out when we think they might be a candidate. Significantly more HFs, that is refractory to treatment. Significantly more systemic organ failure, especially renal. Lots and lots of new HD patients and PD patients now. I'm guessing that's Huntington's disease and Parkinson's.
Probably.
Significantly more septic patients without sources of origin of infection. Endocarditis, myocarditis, pericarditis. Hypertensive emergencies, not responding to medication. Lots of clots. And the weirdest clots that do not respond to anticoagulants. Lots of neurological problems. Strokes in people that should not be having strokes, i.e. young people. Rapid aggressive cancers that are stage 4 with no hope and dead very quickly. Significantly more death than with no COVID.
Now, we're going to pause there for this edition. We'll be back Friday with more. This is a portrait you've just heard of today's current catastrophic health damages resulting from these bioweapons. Again, generally speaking, no one is improving. Some symptoms seem to abate once in a while, but if you get off what you're doing, they'll come back. This is a terrible, terrible thing that's done to humanity. It is evil. It is satanic. It is inhuman. And these people are suffering terribly. Many of you listening right now are suffering terribly. So we've been through a lot tonight, and hopefully it's helpful. Do listen to this program twice if you can. Certainly share it, spread it around. We hope something will turn up at some point to reverse the DNA damage to the body, the changes. It's going to be a very tall order to fill.
Well, you know, until then, you just manage the symptoms.
That's all you can
do. You know, try to get evaluated, adequately. Find out what you're dealing with.
Right. And there's so many different symptoms, so many different areas that this thing goes after in your body, and the symptoms that generate and arise from whatever, the digestive tract, the heart, it doesn't matter. You're going to get symptoms of all kinds. Try and manage them to be comfortable, to be able to continue a reasonable quality of life, if that's possible. This is not a joke, and it's getting worse. And they don't need to inject more people. They've got 13 billion injections now into the arms of about 8 billion people. 600 million shots into the arms of 335 million here in the U.S. And remember this also, none of the invaders are being injected. What does that tell you? Think about it.
Yep.
Okay, young lady, talk to you soon. Great job.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
And we'll pause and come right back with much more in just a few minutes, so hang on.